take care of how much you value time, because you never get it back.
How you doing? Welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's turning wild ideas into wild growth. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder and podcast producer at Max Podcasting. And you can email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high-quality podcast. This is episode 191, which backwards is, we now know. And today's guest is Amy Woods, which backwards is not Amy Woods. Amy is the CEO and founder of Content 10X and is one of the biggest pioneers, leading names in the space of content repurposing, aka maximizing, getting the most of your content. In addition to running her amazing agency, she is the author of the best-selling and amazing book, Content 10X, and of course hosts the amazing Content 10X podcast. In this episode, we talk everything from repurposing content, building out your agency from the ground up, including validating what you have to offer, getting feedback, ironing out your services, and building a team around you. And we hit on everything from repurposing silent movies, which takes a very, very special talent, to some advanced mathematical formulas and equations, and there's a reason for that. It is Amy Woods. All 10 of her. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with Amy Woods, the queen of content repurposing, right? That's you were born into that. But founder and CEO of Content 10X, the world's first content repurposing agency. Just an absolute all-star, rock star, shooting star. Stars channel, whatever you want to call it. Amy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for that intro. I feel like we're only going to go downhill from here on in now, Max.
Oh, this is, you know me well. No, thank you so much for joining. Really excited to dive into the world of content repurposing, remarketing. And I want to start off with a story about ham, because you have told the only story I've ever heard in the world about repurposing ham. Can you share that?
Oh my goodness. This means that you've listened to maybe my first or second ever podcast episode.
Amy, I was listening before you were recording them. That's
I think it was an analogy of how repurposing spans more than just content, isn't it? And how, you know, in our lives, there's examples all the time of how we take one thing and then make it, you know, go and go and get more and more and squeeze the value out of something. And I think the ham story was when we went on this holiday into Mexico, on vacation to Mexico, and this multi, I think we ended up just laughing and calling it like the multi-purpose, multifunctional ham that just appeared in the evening meal, and then the next day in all forms of the breakfast meal, and then in various ways throughout the lunch courses, and then throughout the whole holiday, it was just like, here's the ham again, here's the ham again, here's the ham again. And they really, really, really made this ham go as far as they could. And yeah, I guess that's kind of the analogy for repurposing, that if you cook this big turkey or this big ham, let's say Christmas turkey or Thanksgiving turkey, it's the same thing. And then you have so much more that it can go on, you know, to be the sandwiches and the omelette and the, you know, it could go on the soup, etc. So yeah, the ham story.
That was a slam dunk, a ham dunk. But does repurposed ham still taste good?
I'm going to say it depends how many days since it was created and how long has this been repurposed, how long been going on. Oh, you know what though, it depends what you do with it, doesn't it? It's funny, the analogies with content, but yeah, of course it can taste good. Although I'll admit, on this vacation, which was a very low budget all-inclusive vacation in Mexico, which I would not recommend. If you're going to go on these all-inclusive holidays, probably don't go really low budget, because it was pretty poor quality food and drink throughout the holiday. And that instance it wasn't, but I guess if you do it right, then every reincarnation of it could be great.
So somewhere around that time, or maybe a little bit after that time, your LinkedIn fascinates me, because there's so many people I speak to that there's like, you look at their LinkedIn experience and there's like, oh my God, they had, this was position number 75. Then for the 76th job, this is, you know, we're in this industry. And like, there's so many amazing careers. And then you look at your LinkedIn and there's pretty much two things on your resume, which is awesome. And for, I think it was 13 years, you spent time with Accenture in a management consulting, I'll call it, and et cetera role. So what was it about that world that kind of sucked you in and kept you in that management consulting world for so long?
So basically, I studied management and mathematics at university. And, you know, you're kind of trying to work out what you're going to have a career in. Wasn't really too sure. Took some part-time and full-time various work straight after to save up some funds to go traveling. Spent a year out traveling around, went to the US, Australia, New Zealand, and throughout Asia working as well. And then obviously had to kind of get back, grow up, and get a career and start on that path. I think, like, there were various options at the time, but management consulting and Accenture was a really good proposition at the time for me, because I was really interested in business and I thought that I would go and work there for about 2 years, learn a lot about business, and then leave and start my own business. So it was kind of a two-year plan. That's what I said to all my friends and my family. Yeah, I'm going to go work for Accenture for a couple of years and then start my own business. But as you pointed out, 2 years became 13 years.
Yeah. If you round up, I mean, you were pretty close.
Yeah, exactly. If you like, when you work at a consultancy firm like Accenture, to be fair, you do have lots of different jobs. So because it's project-based work and you go and work for different clients, every client is in, you know, a different location. It might be a different country. You work with a completely different set of people most of the time. So you have lots of different jobs. And so during the time that I worked there, I worked with Bank of America, Bank of Ireland, Microsoft, the UK government, lots of different organizations. And it was interesting, actually. It was got to travel, got to work with some really, really smart people. And it was all about solving problems. So it was all about working with these big companies to help them solve problems and help them achieve what they wanted to achieve. And so it was also working with some of the most senior people in some of those, you know, those huge organizations like Microsoft. You know, I guess I took to it. I had a successful career over there with Accenture. Every time I think I was thinking about leaving, it was probably about the time that you just get that next promotion. And then you think, oh, but I've worked hard and I've just got this promotion, so I'll give it another year. And it kind of went like that, really. And to be honest, though, like the reason that I left was scratching that itch that I'd always had. So as I mentioned, I kind of initially thought, right, this is a two-year thing, and it became so much longer. But that was because I always kind of felt that I needed to come up with this big business idea and had to come up with some kind of invention or something like that. And I'd be watching Dragon's Den, which is the UK, you know, equivalent of Shark Tank, and sure, things like that. And I'd be thinking, right, you know, what can my invention be, or what, you know, what can I come up with, and things like that. And because that never really came, it seemed like a good idea to just carry on with the career. But then it just came a point where I couldn't do that kind of travel anymore. It was very much an expectation that you leave the house very early on Monday morning and then get back on Friday night and you know, spend the whole week away, really. And that kind of travel was fine in my early 20s and things like that, but it soon starts to wear on you after a while. And so, yeah, a combination of just the not wanting to do so much travel and finally wanting to scratch that itch and start my own thing. But it is funny, right? Usually you would see so many different kind of career, you know, like jobs and things like that. Whereas I'm like, yep, 13 years at Accenture. I must say that I probably have had about 50 jobs though that haven't made the CV, but they were before I started Accenture. All the jobs that you do when you're at university. And
there's the uncensored X-rated LinkedIn version.
Exactly.
That has everything. Yeah.
All those ones as well. Yeah.
So you mentioned a knack for problem solving while you're there. I mean, I'm sure that shaped you massively as you progressed in your career. What's a tip you have for identifying problems and starting to attack them?
It's all about, I suppose, looking at what you want the end state to be. So, you know, looking at what do you want to achieve? What's the end state and what does that look like? So often I say kind of what's the to be, what do we want to be getting to? And then looking at the as is now then. So mapping out, well, this is what we want to get to. This is how it should be. And then mapping out the current state. And if you are looking at processes and things like that, then documenting everything, you know, like really getting down into detail of what are the current processes and how are we currently doing things. And then when you've got that detail, and I think a lot of people think that they understand their processes and they understand how things work, when actually they don't really. Like, you have to dig deep and speak to people in your teams and get into the detail and document processes. And it's usually when you do that, when you break things down and you start documenting processes, that you just start to identify those weaknesses that you need to strengthen, the gaps that you need to fill, the redundancies that, you know, just shouldn't be there and aren't adding any value, that you need to remove as well. And then through, you know, strengthening the weaknesses, filling in the gaps, and then removing the redundancies, you can usually see that way then and craft that plan to get into where you need to be. So I'm a very organized and very structured person. I'm a very kind of processy driven person. So I always attack these things with that, with structure, with, you know, analysis of processes, and then of documenting the step by step, you know, that the, therefore, you know, the, what's the project, what's the movement that needs to happen in order to get us now to that final state. So it's all about not just on a whim or just kind of making some decisions on how you might get there and not really documenting it, but setting then those deadlines and those processes and those steps that are going to get you to, you know, the end state where you need to be. So that's usually the approach that I take, really, very methodical and very structured in how I approach things.
So let's break down your career into the little step-by-step and get into content 10X as well as repurposing content. So you have this whole career, you know, in addition to your 50 other jobs in management consulting. What was the first little aha that, hey, there's a world of taking pieces of content and kind of extrapolating that like crazy in order to create more content out of it?
So I guess there's a little bit of a story to this. So I was actually off work, off Accenture. I'd been poorly, so I had went through a bit of a period of ill health where I had to have these operations, and, you know, then had to have some recovery time off. So I'd never literally had a day off sick in like my entire career, and then had to take this time off, and so that took me off the hamster wheel. So, you know, suddenly I wasn't going to work every day and I was recovering from the operations that I needed to have. And when I was off this hamster wheel, I was firstly thinking, right, okay, this is the time to think about what's next and what kind of maybe business I could start and things like that. And I immersed myself in the world of online business because, as I mentioned, I was really looking for something that had less travel. And I thought, actually, wouldn't it be brilliant if you could set up a business that required almost no travel, really, because it's an online digital business. So I immersed myself in that world, and I was listening to podcasts and reading books and listening to audio books and, you know, just blog posts and social and things like that. And I found the typical people you find in that world, especially for small business. So, you know, Pat Flynn, Amy Porterfield, Gary Vaynerchuk, people like that, and started to realize, okay, you know, there's something in this. So honestly, the first step that I took on this like journey out of corporate was I started something quite similar to what I'd been doing in terms of business consulting and helping other businesses, but in an online capacity. So I developed this online course and I was doing kind of virtual consultations and things like that with some small businesses. So jumping out of like helping giant corporates to like more smaller businesses. And in all honesty, my heart wasn't really in that at all. It was lots of skills that I learned along the way, but I knew I haven't really found that thing. But immersing myself in this online business world, I was realizing how important content was and content marketing and kind of really trying to learn a lot about that. And I think it comes back to how I'm very process orientated and all of that, because I started to repurpose content. So I was putting out content for this work that I was doing that resulted in me doing a video every week. And then I was turning that video into a blog post and then turning it into some quote graphics and just turning it into some content and trying to have this repeatable system and process every week that if I could do one thing, I could get more content from it. And that was the light bulb moment, really, because I had a person, like a graphic designer, that was helping me with creating some of these images. And I had a writer who I'd send the video off to and get some support with turning it into a blog post. I realized that for businesses, that this is a proposition, this is a service offering, because you don't want to be juggling lots of different freelancers or different hiring lots of different people in-house to do all of this if there's a possibility that there's one supplier that could just do it for you. And you just create this core content, send it off to that one supplier, and they have all those different skill sets in their business and do all the project management, and then ta-da, kind of deliver it all back, all of this additional content. So that was the thing that got me really excited. I guess I just kind of thought, I'm definitely think I'm onto something with this. So it was from doing it a little bit myself that then made me think, right, okay, this is a proposition and this is something that I think, you know, people will want help with. And it's I guess that's the origin story of the idea.
I appreciate it. That's the ta-da. And I can't sing, so that's about as much singing as I'm going to do. But it's a really natural story. And I think, again, you used your being processy, you used your problem solving, and it jumped out at you. And I think that's, you know, there's so many businesses that start off by an entrepreneur just realizing a pain point themselves and doing it themselves before they build out a team around it. And that's clearly the case with you. So that it makes a ton of sense why your business is where it is. How did you figure out what are the actual best services to offer?
One of the first things that I did was I thought, right, I need to test this. It's all right me thinking that I people want this, but I need to actually get some proof of that.
This is where you sent me the check for $10 million and said, try this out. And I was like, fine.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, the rest is history, really.
It's true. It's on Wikipedia.
Yeah, exactly. What did I do? So I booked in to go to a mastermind that was run by, I don't know if you've heard of Chris Ducker before.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. He was on, he's been on the show before.
He's been on the show. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, he's been on, it was episode 99. So that's a memorable one.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, talking about youpreneurship and personal branding, yeah, and all of that, I'm sure. So I mentioned to you about how I was immersing myself in this world of online business with the likes of Amy Porterfield and people like that. And they were always talking about masterminds, about, you know, like finding other people and going and joining masterminds and things like that. And being over here in the UK, there wasn't really an awful lot of that going on at all that I could find. So firstly, I started my own, like just a small mastermind, nothing paid or anything, but just like a group of us that were meeting up every 2 weeks. But they were people similar stage to me. So I wanted to actually find and speak to more of the ideal clients. So I went to this mastermind. Chris was hosting just a small little gathering of 8 people and himself for one day in London. And so I booked onto that, which, you know, was an investment before I even had a business. But I decided that I'm going to go along and I'm going to, you know, present to the room. I know Chris has a podcast, so he's an ideal client. And I know that people who turn up are probably going to be content creators as well. So that was an initial like validation and stepping stone, because I had a really good response from the people who turned up to that. When I stood up and delivered my little presentation, it was really funny because coming from that Accenture world, you know, I turned up with a handout for everybody and I developed a presentation and stuff. And it was
you ordered a lunch and
yeah, exactly. It was definitely more of a kind of, you know, round robin discussion then. But anyway, I think it made an impact because people probably thought it was quite funny when it was my turn and I got my little, like, you know, here's a little handout for you all. And it was just funny. It just makes me cringe when I think about it now. But anyway, and it was great feedback though. Everyone in the room when I explained, because it was mainly explaining, if you had a podcast or you created videos, this is what I would do, this is what I think the service looks like, and this is how the process would work and things like that, everybody just said, you know, if you did this, I'd be a customer, you know, I'd work with you, it's perfect, etc. So I got really good validation and, you know, some great pointers as well, you know, why would you think about this, and I'd want that, I wouldn't want this, and things like that. So they gave me feedback. The next step was to just trial it for free with people. So some of the people there on that day that I kept in touch with, you know, trialed it, let me do it for free, send me something and let's get this going. So did that, and again got feedback. And so firstly it was through speaking to people, doing a few free trials with people, and then just getting going. I guess it's just the first client and then you learn from that, and the second client, and then having discovery calls with people and starting to realize the questions that I regularly get asked that I'm saying maybe we don't do, and thinking maybe we should start doing that. And I would say that Content 10X will be 5 years old in May this year. The first customer I had was on in kind of very well, like late April, May 27. Would that be 17? Yeah.
Well, congrats. Or happy. Yeah. I don't know if that's a congrats or happy birthday or happy anniversary. All the above.
Kind of it all, isn't it? Yeah. So birthday, anniversary. I never know what to say either, actually, when it's your business. But
Festivus.
Yeah, Festivus. Content 10X Festivus in April. But April, May time. But I'd say that, you know, we've evolved so much. Like the services that we provide and the way that we work, and like I'm sure with most people, what you think is going to work and what you think people want is usually really different to what they actually want and how it's going to work as you start to actually get going. So from the initial validation, it then just became, you know, life experience, just getting more clients and understanding the wants and needs of the people we want to work with, really.
What would you say is the biggest change in how you operate as a company since 5 years ago?
I guess just way more professional in terms of when it was initially starting out, you know, it was just me actually doing a lot of the work. So I was turning my hand at the design and the podcast edit and the writing and things like that. But that was probably, to be fair, only for about 2 months or maybe even only 1 month. Whereas now, I guess I know what we are. I know that we're a creative agency. I know I run it like an agency now. You know, I've got peers in the agency world and I understand the business model that we now have and deep expertise. So, you know, I've got a head of creative now who's, you know, got a full background, a professional background in running a creative team with designers and video editors and, you know, a copywriting team with professional copywriters and everything like that, and an operations manager and things like that. So I guess I really just up-leveled how deeply specialized our skill sets are to make sure that we're producing, you know, the best quality content that we can produce for our clients. When we first started out, it was creating the content for our clients and delivering it to them. I realized very early on that they wanted a completely end-to-end solution of having that content distributed and published for them as well. So it was almost fixing one problem and causing another problem in taking a piece of content and repurposing it into lots of other assets and then delivering them the assets. Because then it was like, well, here's one piece of content that I've given you and now I've got loads more, but I still need to actually publish that and get that out and distribute it and all of that. Otherwise I just have a distribution issue. So going more end to end as well with our offering. So from, you know, the point of giving us the content to actually working with their teams to get all of that content out across all of the platforms is probably another fairly quick change, I suppose, I made. Maybe that was probably the first year. But yeah, I'd just say, you know, we've grown up. I suppose we've just kind of grown up into the business we are.
Growing up right before our very eyes.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it took me a few years to even really ever call us an agency. I didn't really, sounds a funny thing to say, but we were just content repurposing business, and I've started to kind of realize, well, actually we're an agency and we provide, you know, an agency offering. And so just then realizing that, and then starting to realize more, I need to understand the business models of agencies and all of that and start to understand the industry, I would say.
Anyone who has, let's take a podcast, for example. Anyone who has a podcast knows how much work it is. And if you take it to the next level of slicing out bits of it and sharing, that sounds wrong, sharing out pieces of content and like going all in on the marketing side of it, that's like a ton of work. And same thing applies for any kind of major media. I always mess those up in the marketing space. Like, content production is just like a crazy ton of work. So I really admire so much what you do and what your team does to take this load off of so many business owners and marketers' plates, because it's truly such a game changer when you free up that time and you provide what you provide. How do you get your team and yourself to be able to take on like more and more of a load like this and perform a service that is just so time consuming?
It's really, really down to having really tight processes, I think. So we and the tools to help enable us to follow those processes. And that definitely comes back to the Accenture days for me, you know, in terms of, I think, what I bring to the team and the business. So firstly, what we offer to our clients is a recurring service. So similar to yourself and many kind of podcasters and video creators, we typically work with episodic creators. So there's the cadence there. So it's like a weekly provision of services. And so it's making sure that we are repeating success every week and delivering the same processes. And that comes down to firstly documenting all of those processes. So having really tight standard operating procedures and making sure that we keep them up to date and making sure that we're always reviewing and optimizing them. And then having really tight project management. So we use a tool called ClickUp. I'm not sure. Have you?
ClickUp, that's pronounced ClickUp, like E-P?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, ClickUp.
I typically just run projects into the ground. That's my preferred.
Have you used Asana or Basecamp?
Yeah.
Or
I've
any
got a
of
little
those?
Bit of experience.
It's just the same. Yeah.
Almost looks like a bulletin board format of organizing stuff.
It's similar. Yeah. So we used Trello for years. Like, yeah, for the first, well, we've been on ClickUp for about 1 year. So we used ClickUp for about 4 years. Sorry, Trello for about 4 years. We just kind of grew out of that because we needed a bit more reporting power. And it's just what gets you here doesn't get you there. And we got to the point where we'd outgrown Trello, but Trello was great. So we use systems like that. So we use ClickUp that kind of manages all the different tasks, and it's really good for workflow. So, you know, different people all have a different role in a client's weekly repurpose. So it's great for the handoff from, you know, the project manager to the copywriter, the designer, et cetera. Obviously, we have to track our time as well and make sure that we're spending the right amount of time, but not too much time on each client, so we don't kind of overserve and things like that. So it's really just tight systems and processes aligned with really tight kind of, you know, management of that as well. And then I think an engaged team as well. So just making sure that we are, you know, all engaged, all enjoying our work, all communicating really well with each other, and trying to just have a, you know, an energy and some fun about the place, so that we're blending being super process driven and all about our kind of, you know, like making sure that we meet our deadlines and we deliver on quality, but that we don't lose the creative edge as well, and that we're always, you know, being creative and having fun while we do it as well. So it's, I think it's just all really, really important to kind of make sure that you do your best to mix all of that together as part of how the team functions, really.
And that team is so important. How have you found the team that's one, willing to, you know, do this stuff and is excited about actually doing the work, but two, is kind of all in and committed on building and growing out your company?
It's the hardest part, I would say. If I was asked, like, what is the hardest part of running?
There you go. Well, we can. I'll just go back and ask that question too.
It is that, you know, people are everything, and we are a repurposing agency. But what are we really selling? Well, we're selling the expertise of our people to other businesses, and so we're, you know, that they are everything to the business. Without the team, we don't have an offering. We don't have a business. It's so hard. And we're a remote agency as well. So it wasn't a pandemic shift to move to a completely remote, you know, business. It was something from day one that we all work in different locations, and we, you know, have get togethers as and when we can, you know, team building, team away days and things like that. But, you know, the majority of the time, 90% of the time, we're remote. So that adds another, you know, dimension to it as well, because it's finding people who can be self-motivated and enjoy working in their own home office or, you know, where they want to work, but still be part of a remote team as well, and engage and take part in, you know, the team spirit whilst in that remote way of working. So I don't know, I guess over the years I've become better at the recruitment process, because you just live and you learn, and you learn from your mistakes and things like that, and you look at your successes and think, how can I repeat that as well? So I guess maybe I've got better at the screening process and the questions, and, you know, really trying to understand if somebody seems like a right fit. And you don't get it right every time as well, so, you know, try my best to get it right, but I certainly haven't got it right every time. So it's, you know, often kind of trial and error as well. But yeah, it's the hardest part. You just have to do your best to be dead open and honest and transparent with people who apply for the positions when they become available, as to exactly what it's like to work for us and how we work and things like that. So there's no surprises when they come in, and then hope that they're as honest and transparent to you as well. And when that all comes together, you can usually find the right people, but it does take some time.
Hands down, like, the hardest thing. It's funny, people are so important, but it is so difficult to find the right fit, and also get yourself as a business owner to, like, take that step of, okay, I can't do this all myself. I can't do even a sliver of this myself, and pass it on to someone else. But that's what's needed to grow.
Yeah.
On the content repurposing side, what is your, just you personally, what's your favorite type of content repurposing?
Well, I mean, it's definitely video. So, you know, obviously you can repurpose pretty much any form of content, especially any form of long form content, but it's definitely video. And the reason for that is because there's just so many dimensions to video content, because when video is the starting point, with video, you also have audio. So unless it was like a Charlie Chaplin silent movie or something like that. But
I mean, it comes up all the time, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Can you repurpose our silent movie? But that would be a challenge.
That would be great, by the way. I might start a spinoff podcast production business that just focuses on silent movie podcasts. That
would
be great.
It would be awesome.
Just a little white noise to fall asleep to.
Exactly. But they, if you don't, if you've got, you know, it's kind of typical video content and it's not heavily visually dependent either, which of course sometimes it is. So if it's not got that visual dependence, then with video, you have audio. So you can often repurpose the video into a podcast, which, you know, we see more and more these days as well, don't we? That's becoming, you know, extremely popular way to go with podcasting. And then you have with video, just more video. So I always like to say, you know, a longer form video can have lots of little video babies and you can put them on social media. So you can slice and dice the best points and golden nuggets from video. And then you've got social video. So you've got that long form video that might have gone onto YouTube or your website in short form, minute, 30 seconds, even less, going onto Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn or wherever your audience are. But then you've got everything that was said that can be turned into written content. So you can create blog posts from your videos, from the points that are made and all of that. You can create LinkedIn posts and tweets and all of the written content that can come from it. And then, you know, you can pull out quotes, or maybe if it's like a how-to type thing, even an infographic and things like that, so you can create some graphics and visual content as well. So I guess, like, I always see video at the very top of the content pyramid because there's so many different dimensions and it's a lot easier to then repurpose than, for example, something like starting with a blog post or starting with a white paper or research report
or a silent movie.
Yeah, or a silent movie. Yeah, but even a silent movie you could turn into little silent clips on social media. You could put you could put on TikTok with a viral song, couldn't you? And you'd probably do okay, actually. But yeah, you wouldn't get a blog post from a silent, you'd get very little from a silent movie. So blog posts and silent movies are probably one of the worst things to repurpose. No, I mean, even a blog post though, like, you know, you can still turn that into lots of other content, don't get me wrong, but
right,
it's just video has the most dimensions to work with.
Yeah. And even like, I mean, I could see endless pieces from video and from podcasts and even a blog post, you know, like there's what, like hundreds of sentences that you can pull and kind of turn into tweets or posts on,
yeah,
LinkedIn,
exactly.
Things like that. What I'm sure this varies a ton. Well, that was a nice, like, what I'm sure this varies a ton, but do you have a ballpark range that you talk about with clients of like how many pieces of content that you should strive to pull from like a podcast, for example, one podcast episode?
I mean, it does depend on a few things. So it depends on how long the podcast episodes are. So, you know, some of our clients and people we work with do, you know, fairly short in the grand scheme of the podcasting world episodes that might be like kind of 10 to 15 minute episodes. And then some clients have 1 hour, you know, episodes. So it can depend on what you're working with as well. But I tend to think that if the sky's the limit and you've got lots of kind of time and budget, then it's just about extracting as much value as possible from them. So from a 1 hour, say, video interview, we could probably pull, you know, at least like 10, if not more, really good clips from that video, like short video clips that could go on social media. But it'd only work if we were able to pull enough standalone clips that didn't require any context of what was said before or what was said after to be able to stand alone on another platform as a good, valuable piece of content. And it'd only really work if the conversation kind of waxed and waned enough that it was going to be different points and not just, you know, three different clips that are kind of from the same part of the conversation and kind of about the same thing, really. So, you know, it depends on like the format and how many different topics are covered and then the duration of the content, because we always look at it with the from the eye of a journalist, really, in terms of how many, you know, how many stories could we pull from this, how many points were made, how many really good engaging questions could come from this. So yeah, it's a tough question to answer because there are quite a lot of those moving parts. But another thing just to mention and to consider as well is what the cadence is on this, let's say, podcast. So if it's a podcast, is it weekly? Is it bi-weekly? Is it monthly? Because one thing to consider is if it's every week, for example, and you're trying to find decent content to go out during the course of the week that that episode goes live, and then the next week when you move on to the next episode, you will be repurposing and sharing content about that and so on, then there's only so many times you might want to post a tweet right. about the episode that week.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to take some time to like eat and sleep and breathe.
Yeah, exactly. Eat, sleep. And there's other things you'll talk about, isn't there? So if somebody says to us, we want to post daily on LinkedIn, but we do always do this post on a Friday about this, and then Monday's our post about that and blah, blah, blah. Then it'll be like, right, okay, well, that means that there's 3 spare days left to post about the podcast then if you want daily, and you've already set aside that day to talk about all the stuff. That's brilliant. We'll find 3, fantastic pieces of content for LinkedIn every week based on, the podcast episode. So, kind of like have to look at what else is going out, or blog post or whatever. There's a lot of moving parts to answer that question, really.
Yeah, it's a tough question. I'm just here to make you pissed off at me. No, but I like your approach that it doesn't matter. It's not like you do 10 pieces of content that you pulled from something, and then the 11th one is what would have like really, been the tipping point and got people to pay attention to it. Like that emphasis on value and extracting value, and that focus really on quality over quantity. I guess there's some quantity in there as well, but that focus on quantity, damn it, quality and value is what's gold. And then overall, what would you say? This is another not so easy question. What is your number one tip for content repurposing?
Ooh, I feel like I kind of covered it a little bit in terms of, looking for that value, but let me, I think the number one tip really is, I think, to focus on the quality of your core content. So having a core piece of content that you focus on, whether that's going to be a podcast or whether that's going to be video or a live stream or blog post, but that, core longer form piece of content. I think it's to make sure that you really focus on that, and make sure that you really focus on that being of the highest quality that it can be. But knowing when you are creating that content, what you're going to repurpose it into as well. So it's a bit of a saying of mine that repurposing starts at the planning phase. It shouldn't be an afterthought. You shouldn't sit with content and think, what will I repurpose it into? You should create content knowing, that you've already planned that you're going to repurpose it into X, Y, and Z. Because I think it will help you to therefore structure it slightly differently sometimes. So, if it was a podcast, perhaps you'd have certain sections and segments and things like that. And you always know that that segment's going to become a short little TikTok or something. And you always know that that section's always going to become the quote graphic. When they answer that question, that'll always be my quote graphic and things like that. So, focus on the quality of the core content, and within that quality that you're focusing on, know what you are going to repurpose the content into as well, because it will make your repurposing so much easier if you've planned it in advance, and quality becomes more quality. So, if you're going to be repurposing subpar quality content, then all the repurposed content thereafter is probably going to be subpar as well. But if you've done that quality pay to begin with, quality breeds more quality. So all your other repurposed content is going to be top notch as well. So I think that's my main tip, really.
Quality, quality, quality. It's a tough word to say all day, but I can say it 3 times in a row because I've been practicing. If you are interested in having very high quality stuff, high quality podcast that's reflects back positively on your personal brand and your business overall, but you realize that this quality stuff takes a high quantity of time, almost messed up there, hit me up at max@maxpodcasting.com. I will help take loads and loads of that time off your plate, give it back to you to free up however you want to use it, and deliver a high quality podcast that you, your business, and your brand deserve. Email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high quality podcast. Now, let's talk a little bit about some low-quality teeth. So let's get to a fan favorite segment called the Wild Business Shoutout of the Week. Thank you. That not often does do I get a laugh before the harmonica comes in.
The Wild Business Shoutout of the Week.
You are the best. You are the best for this section. Thank you so much. Wild Business Shoutout of the Week. This is where we talk about a creative marketing campaign or ad or even a single image, and it can involve going to the dentist or something from dentists. Amy, do you mind sharing something a little toothy?
It's as if you already know what I'm going to say. So,
as if.
It was a really good ad that I saw recently. It was a cosmetic dentistry business. And I guess they were, you know, advertising their services. But the image was a photograph, and it was a family photograph with a mom and a dad and two kids, and just a perfect looking family portrait type photo. Everyone looked great except the dad, who had a missing tooth, and it was quite zoomed in. He was like the focal point. He was in the middle as well with this massive, big, toothy smile, except the top, you know, his main, like one of his top middle teeth was missing. It's probably photoshopped out because it looked quite a bit black, like it had been blacked out.
If not, that's commitment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got to take your tooth out if you want this modeling job, and then good luck with the rest of your career. They did hardly needed to say anything else. I think the words were something along the lines of, you know, why your teeth matter, or something like that, you know, why dentistry matters, or why it's important to take care of your teeth. But just one thing, and it just said it all, because it, you know, he just, you saw nothing on that photo. You didn't see his kids or his wife or anything. You just immediately saw a photo and thought, wow, look at that man with his missing tooth. And I wonder why he's but I got a missing tooth. And, you know, he just looked really bad. So I think to me, it just went to show that a picture can say 1,000 words, and the power of, you know, visual content and what that can tell us. So that was just a standout ad that I saw recently that I thought, how well done and how clever to do that.
The toothless wonder. Yeah, a picture, I mean, it can say 1,000 words, it could, I guess, 999 teeth. But I think that applies, you know, across industries or across lines of business, is that if you can showcase like a real pain point or a real like what if, like what could go wrong if people don't, you know, do whatever you're providing or what your service can help with, like in your case or my case, like if we showcase like how much time people are just buried under, all the effort of like creating content and repurposing content like that, and do it in a succinct way. That's a hell of a tough word to say. I just learned that. A succinct way, like an image or a little clip, it can be really, really impactful. And next thing you know, you're talking to your friend about someone who's just missing their tooth, but it's an ad. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I think if you can talk to other people about ads, like you said, I have mentioned it. I was saying to a friend the other day, I saw the funniest ad. That's something, isn't it? Like, how often do we, you know, we're usually annoyed by ads, aren't we? They just get in the way and we swat them aside. So if you mention one to somebody else, then you're doing something right, aren't you?
Let's wrap up with another story about a dentist. No, I'm just kidding. Let's wrap up with some rapid fire Q&A. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
All right, let's get wild. Let's get straight to the hard stuff. You said you studied mathematics in college. Well, I don't think I've spoken to anybody who studied math in university. How advanced are these equations at the college? I mean, I took math classes, but for a major, how advanced are these formulas and equations that you're working with in college?
Oh my goodness, like unbelievably advanced. Like, it wasn't actually a first choice of mine. It's kind of a long story. I wanted to do straight management, but I just missed the grade to do the straight management course. But because I did really well in maths, the maths faculty got in touch and said, you can come and do a joint honours degree in mathematics and management. So I didn't, you know, I still wanted to do that maths degree. So a management degree. So I thought it won't be too bad. But really, honestly, when I look back, like if I go into the loft and look at some of the old work from those days. I can't believe it's my handwriting associated with those formulas, because it is like looking at Chinese, or like it's like looking at a complete other language. Yeah, really, really, really advanced and hard. It was hard, like it was.
I can't even imagine. It takes me back to I did well in math in high school as well. And I was, I guess, a little bit overcompt, a little bit overcocky. So I signed up for like the more advanced calculus class in college and was like promptly hit on the face by, I mean, that was the worst class I ever took, but that I did not do well. And I was greatly under prepared for that class. Fortunately, I was able to withdraw from it mid-semester and still be okay with my other classes. But that was a very, very, very dark memory. There's math that's good and rewarding, and then there's like advanced math that's like, wait a second, this, you're right, it's a whole other language.
It is. It's a language. It's problem solving with a completely new and different language, and you have to learn that language too. So yeah, I don't know. I'm sure I got something from it. If anything, just the grit of trying to get through the 3 years of maths when I don't think it. My parents would probably disagree. I don't think it came as naturally to me as some of the other people who were studying it that are now actuaries and things like that. But I managed to get through it. So a bit of grit.
As you can tell by now, my rapid fire is not the most rapid in the world. What is I call them weird talents, but what's a unique talent or party trick? Something that has no impact on your business, but you're just really, really good at doing this.
Probably juggling. I can juggle.
Really?
I'm quite good at that.
That's a weird talent. Nice. How'd you learn to juggle?
There was a guy that came into my school once and did this little circus tricks workshop at lunchtime. And I went along and I was fascinated by the fact that he taught me how to just juggle three things. And then, you know, he came back another time and then I moved on to, he had like clubs and I learned how to juggle with the clubs. And then I don't know. I just used to do it all the time. There was a juggling shop in Manchester where I live, and can you imagine? Oh, it's called like a circus shop, but anyway, it's really weird. It's not there anymore. It's like very niche. And I used to go in and buy like different juggling balls and stuff like that. So I'm not as good as I used to be, but it's definitely a little party trick that I can kind of roll out and do a little juggle.
I thought that was you I saw in the circus one time with the juggling flaming chainsaws that were 10 foot a piece. But
it was, if everything goes wrong with the repurposing world, then that's my fallback, to be honest.
Purpose. But anyway, you slice it, juggling it. Oh, that was a tough word, slice. Anyway, you slice it, juggling is a phenomenal skill for a business owner. So I appreciate that.
Exactly.
What is an example of you being organized and processy in your personal life?
Ooh, another passion of mine is actually cooking. And I would say that maybe it's the fact that every week I will plan every meal for the week ahead, every associated ingredient for every meal. And then I'll do my like advanced online order and then write all the meals on a board in the kitchen. So it's like running a restaurant. Basically, it's like being a chef. So maybe that's like super organized, but maybe most people do that as well. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, my fiance Dane and I, I'd say, are about halfway there. Like we like meal prepping and you know, cooking two or three things and then having the leftovers.
I love to
sometimes
do that.
I get out some of the spices and seasonings, but I probably don't go into full advanced calculus formulas like you do for your cooking. So
working out the macros of every meal.
Oh my god, macros. Yeah,
there's apps for that.
And then last thing, you traveled in Asia before you've gotten to this world of repurposing. What was your favorite spot you experienced in Asia?
Thailand. And probably there was an island called Koh Lipi in Thailand, and it was
Koh Lipi. How do you pronounce it?
Yeah, Koh Lipi. I can't remember how you spell it. C O and then L I P E, I think. Lipi. And just like completely idyllic, and it was quite cut off, so there was only like electricity for about 2 hours a day or something on this island, and you know, we weren't there for that long, but it was just just a perfect place, like beaches, weather, things like that. So probably I would say that was a top spot. But as a country, I would say Thailand, though I'm dead keen now to get back out to Asia, and I really want to go to South Korea next time. So that's the plan.
Perfect. Well, Amy, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate your time and all you do. And I know there are so many endless entrepreneurs like myself that are just endlessly, and use the word endless all the time, but are endlessly grateful for what you and your team do. And it's a really, really important problem that you're solving, and you're taking so much time off people's plates. So thank you so much for coming on and, you know, covering everything from math to silent movies. But
no, thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome. So thank you.
Oh, of course. Of course. My pleasure. Where's your favorite place for people to connect and learn more about you?
To maybe learn more, just head to content10x.com. And if you want to connect with me personally, then I would say maybe LinkedIn, but you would not struggle to find me on LinkedIn. Amy Ward's Content 10X founder. You'll see me there.
Perfect. And I mean, Amy, you never share any content. You're just not, you know, you're like somebody that doesn't even use social media. It's very disappointing.
Yeah, exactly.
And then last thing, final thoughts, the stage is yours. It could be a, you know, a piece of juggling advice or your favorite quote or just any words of wisdom you want to end us with. Send us home here.
Oh, wow. This feels suddenly really high pressure. The words of wisdom is to value your time above everything else, because it's the, you know, the one thing that you can never get back. And if there's things that you can do that will be an investment that will save you time, or, you know, anything like that, then whenever you're making a decision in your personal life or your business life, that involves your time, then always remember to factor that as a major consideration. If should I or shouldn't I do this, or is this the best use of my time? So I think it's just that, like, I feel like as I'm getting a bit older as well, not that I'm old, but as I'm getting older,
you
I realize more and more, I realize, you know, just that it's such an important consideration of saying yes and no to things, or whether should I get a bit of help with this and things like that. Well, if it saves me, if I can do it, but someone could help me and save me a week of my time or 10 hours of my time, then how important is that? And usually very. So I think that's it. Like, really just take care of how much you value time, because you never get it back.
Well, it's about time, those final thoughts. Thank you so much, Amy. Amy Woods, for all you do, for sharing your story, your insight, your tips, everything with Content 10X in this week's podcast. If you want to hear more wild stories, if you want to hear more wild stories like Amy's, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast on your favorite app and tell a friend about the podcast, and then start repurposing each other's content. That could take on a whole new meaning. You can also find us on Good Pods, where there are plenty of amazing podcasts that do often get repurposed themselves. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!